Thank you for the invitation. And so basically in this talk, I will propose a scenario which might explain the observed patterns that we see in quarks and neutrinos for the masses and the mixings. So first I will recall what those patterns are. So this is the content of the flavor puzzle. And recently, with the observation of neutrino oscillations and the properties that we have extracted from these oscillations, clearly the flavor puzzles is even more puzzling than before. So, and to introduce this scenario, what I'm going to do is first reconstruct the possible neutrino mass matrices and then make a numerical analysis of these possible neutrino mass matrices and see that these, when you do that, you see that among all the possibilities, the inverted hierarchy is actually favored. And now comes a question, how can you get an inverted hierarchy for the neutrinos? Okay, and the second question is, how can you get large mixing angles for the neutrinos? So I address these questions within the context of the seesaw mechanism and show that it might point to a Majorana mass in six dimensions. So with that, I come with a flavor model in six dimensions in which you have a vortex in the two extra dimensions. So I take these two extra dimensions as a sphere. And in this model, what you do is you have one single family of fermions in six dimensions, and when it interacts with the vortex, it gives rise to three chiral families in four dimensions. So, and this gives you a natural explanation for the replication of families in the standard model and also the hierarchical structure of the standard model. And then, now here I will concentrate on neutrinos. So the nice thing is that in the neutrino sector, the mass matrix comes out automatically off-diagonal. And with this inverted hierarchy structure, this comes out for free. And so I talk about a bit about the constraints about that scenario, which comes mainly from some flavor violating processes, and those are also quite suppressed automatically.
Am I supposed to think of this vortex? Is it just as a topological configuration, or set up by some sourcing fields? Or?
Yep, by gauge field and a scalar field.
Can you tell us the details?
Yes. So this is just a very brief summary so that you know where we are heading, okay? So I start from a very phenomenological bottom-up approach with the neutrino masses, okay? So here, first of all, the flavor puzzle. So we have all these nice guys here, and, well, the pattern is quite strange because we have three families, they, as you know, they have the same gauge interaction, and you have hierarchical masses, first family, lighter than the second, lighter than the third one. Why? We don't know. And these comes with small mixing angles in the quark sector. Now, for neutrinos, we don't even know whether the masses are hierarchical or not, because the neutrino oscillations, they only measure the mass square differences. But what we know is that some mixing angles, two mixing angles, are large. One about 35 degrees and the other one close to maximum. Now in the neutrinos also, we don't know whether lepton number is violated or not. So hierarchical masses, well, we see that neutrinos, they are much, much lighter than the other fermions. So this by itself, the scale is a problem by itself. Now we have hierarchies within one generation and also between the generations. Okay, so a mixing matrix usually is parameterized in a standard way with three angles like that. This is just for notations. So in the quark sector, the CK matrix has, well, all three angles are small, so we have the Khabibbo angle at 13 degrees. And so this mixing matrix is almost the unit matrix. Now, in the neutrino sector, we have two large angles here, so theta 1, 2 between the first and the second column, and theta 2, 3 here, basically between the second and third row, all right, and one small angle. Okay, so for neutrinos, we don't know the hierarchy. Basically, it could be normal like for the other fermions or inverted. So, and the labeling of the states, because we have large mixing angles here, is that you choose the mass state 1 and 2 for the smaller mass square difference. So nu 2 is always heavier than nu 1, but then nu 3 could be up or down compared to this pair, right? So so these are the mass square differences, and there is some hierarchy in the mass square differences. So this one is about 3% of the atmospheric mass square difference. So now the question is, can we fit all this into one single picture? So to do that, what I try to do is reconstruct neutrino mass matrices. For that, well, for neutrinos, we don't know whether they are Dirac or Majorana particles. So, we have the seesaw mechanism, and the seesaw mechanism is a very compelling explanation for the smallness of the neutrino masses, where you have some lepton number violation in the right-handed neutrino sector, and then that is transferred to the light neutrinos through regular Dirac mass, right? So it explains at the same time the lightness of the neutrino masses, and it might also explain the presence of large mixing angles. We'll come back to that later. So in this neutrino mass reconstruction, I will suppose that indeed the neutrino masses are Majorana type and that we have a seesaw type of mechanism. So now, with those ingredients, can we have some picture, consistent picture between quarks and leptons? Well, in the quark sector, we have small mixing angles and very hierarchical masses, and they fit together nicely because, the Wolfenstein parametrization of the CK matrix shows that, for example, you have a small expansion parameter here, and you can, with these, reconstruct easily matrices that have a hierarchical structure. So, and you have relations between these hierarchical masses and the small mixing angles. So now, can we extend this to the lepton sector? Well, to the lepton sector, as I said, in the neutrino sector, you also have a small parameter, which is the ratio of the delta m square. So, and this ratio here happens to be approximately the Khabibov, lambda Khabibov squared. So maybe this is a remnant of a hierarchical pattern. And then we also have, for the angles, a quark-lepton complementarity relation in the sense that the solar mixing angle is not maximal, but the difference between 45 degree and the solar mixing angle is approximately the Khabibov angle. So this also advocates for some sort of complementarity between quarks and leptons. So let's not have any theoretical prejudice and just take the neutrino data with the hierarchy of the delta M square and reconstruct the neutrino mass matrices in those possible hierarchies, for normal hierarchy or for an inverted hierarchy. Now, one thing is that once you have the reconstructed neutrino mass matrix, you want to diagonalize it with a matrix U nu here. Well, this matrix is not the mixing matrix you observe in neutrino oscillation, because you could have some contribution coming from the charged lepton sector. So you have to decide what contribution you have. And in principle, you can have one large angle coming from the charged lepton sector. So you can, so you have two possibilities, and use these two possibilities to reconstruct the mass matrices. Now, the question, the main question here is, how can you have large mixing angles arising? So let's look at the 2x2 cases. Okay, so you have neutrino mass masses and then a mixing matrix. So you reconstruct a neutrino mass matrix, and to have a large angle with this matrix, there are only two possibilities. Well, if you have a normal hierarchy, then you see that all these entries, they have the same order of magnitude, and moreover, the determinant of this matrix is zero, all right? And if you have an inverted hierarchy, well, then there is one special pattern in which the two masses are opposite and the angle is maximal or close to maximal. In that case, this entry, the entry 2-2, vanishes, and you have an off-diagonal type of structure.
Why did you say the determinant vanishes?
In the normal hierarchy case, so if mu2 dominates, all right?
Well, you're saying to the, it's approximately?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. To some level in the expansion. Okay? So these are the basic cases where you can get a large mixing angle. Now, for the 3x3 case, it's very similar. So I just show you, and you don't, you don't get many possible patterns. So some with normal hierarchy, but with a normal hierarchy, you could have a sub-matrix here where you have an inverted hierarchy, okay? So, and you reconstruct basically the possible patterns and then put order one coefficients, random order one coefficients, and look at the distributions. So this is an example with this structure. This structure is special because it gives you two large angles without any contribution from the charged lepton sector. So, and you look at the distribution of the three angles and the ratio of delta M square. And, well, when you do that for all these structures, what comes out is that The inverted hierarchy is preferred, just numerically. Okay? And one key ingredient to have large angles is to have these dominant off-diagonal elements. And then you put all the one coefficients, random all the one coefficients. Okay? And then diagonalize. So the all the one coefficient, I took them as a power of 10. 10 to the power of, let's say, x. And x is a random variable that is chosen to be distributed according to a Gaussian, a normal variable. Okay, so basically, you choose a coefficient that can span between 1 over delta and delta. That's another one coefficient, okay, with some Gaussian distribution. And then you just put random coefficients and do that many times and look at the distribution of these angles. So these, in orange, those are the cases where you do have a matrix that has the two large mixing angles in the range that is observed. Okay? And in this case, it is approximately 14% of the cases. So in 14% of the cases, without doing anything, you have two large mixing angles, okay, for the solar angle and atmospheric angle. And when you look at the third angle, it's automatically small.
I'm a little confused by that, because by your discussion of it, just because it seems like a very prior dependent thing. So you're just choosing some way to distribute these random numbers, and then you're saying that, and then you're comparing numerically how often it compares to what they observe, but
there is no prior except that it's order one coefficient.
Well, that's a prior.
Yeah, so it just means that somehow in the theory from which it comes from, well, this structure will be given by some theory, okay, but the coefficients. The dimensionless coefficients are of order one.
Because you can't test different textures against each other without making that prior assumption.
Yeah, I think that's true.
But he's actually fixing the texture, no?
He's picking a
fixed texture and then he compares different textures.
Yeah, I think that's true. I just don't know what conclusion can be drawn from that. I mean, all you can say is that with this prior, this is what I get. And
I'm not saying it's a strong conclusion, okay?
Yes.
I'm saying that, okay, if you have no, of course, if you have some symmetry between the coefficients, you could fall in a special place in those distribution. But I'm not saying that it's not the case, okay? I'm saying that if you don't have any other prior other than this texture, and you think that this explains everything about neutrino parameters observation, then it succeeds in 14% of the cases.
Very well. I just don't know, is that going to be a strong motivation for you to do something with this structure?
Well, this here I've shown only one structure, but for example, if you use this structure here with normal hierarchy, okay, and you do exactly the same thing with the order one coefficients, so the same range for the and the same distribution for the order one coefficient, then you can explain the data in only 3% of the cases. So I'm just saying that without any other assumption, this texture is much worse than this one.
Well, I was with you right to the last sentence.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't see how you can conclude anything comparing them. I mean, just reality happens once.
I agree with that, so.
Not necessarily.
I agree with that. So this is any statistical argument can be totally wrong.
Yeah,
because
maybe you just go on. I just don't.
Okay.
I just hope it doesn't form the basis of.
Because we have only like a, so what is your chances of winning the lottery when you play, right, the national lottery and you want to win $1 million? That's the same. You will not like play a million times. So, but still, even if you play once, you use probabilistic argument, right? So, it's not better or worse than that. Okay, so anyway, so it seems that one key ingredient to have large mixing angles is to have dominant off-diagonal elements and to have an inverted hierarchy. So we come to these questions. How can you get inverted hierarchy patterns with the seesaw? And the second question is, is this inverted hierarchy compatible with hierarchy? By what I mean with the fact that all the masses in the standard model show hierarchy. Okay? So to answer these two questions, let's put it in a seesaw context and let's see it in on a 2x2 case, which is simpler, but it also has actually all the same ingredients as the 3x3 case. So what you do, you have a neutrino mass matrix that comes from a seesaw, and then now for the Dirac mass matrix, I suppose that I have a hierarchical structure, hierarchical masses for the Dirac mass matrix, and then with some mixing matrix diagonalization. And for the right-handed neutrinos, I can always go to the basis where the Majorana mass matrix is diagonal, okay? And then just compute this product, and this is what you obtain. So now, what are the conditions to have an inverted hierarchy with this matrix? Well, you see that this entry here is proportional to delta to the 2 alpha power. So delta is the expansion parameter, and this is delta alpha, and here it's 1.
So what do you mean by inverted hierarchy when you only have 2?
So
the inverted state is illegible, or the first row is illegible?
Sorry?
So I guess mu 1 should be then.
No. It's just that you want degenerate neutrinos. Like in the inverted hierarchy, mu 1 has in the inverted hierarchy. Up. Mu 1 and mu 2, which are the heavier states, are almost degenerate. Okay. So the question here with a 2x2 case is how can you get almost degenerate spectrum for the mu 1 and mu 2, and the answer is you want this neutrino mass matrix, the reconstructed one, to be off diagonal. You want this entry to dominate. Okay, so for this to be possible, you need to suppress basically the 2-2 element. So you have this relationship between the mixing angle here, theta, and the hierarchy of the right-handed masses. So you would tell me immediately, oh, this is like a very, very strong fine-tuning condition, right? You have a condition between an angle and then a mass hierarchy. Yes, But there is one exception, and this exception is when M1 is equal to minus M2. In that case, this is 1, all right? And so the angle theta being maximum, it means that actually the pattern you have for this Majorana mass matrix, instead of being diagonal, is just off-diagonal, which is to say that the two right-handed Majorana neutrinos, they are actually a Dirac couple. Okay, that's the exception.
So you have an approximate flavor symmetry.
Exactly. So when you go to the 3x3 case now, you do exactly the same. So you suppose that you have a hierarchical Dirac masses for the neutrinos, and you suppose you have small mixing angles. Okay? And then for the right-handed neutrino mass, where you suppose that you have some sort of Dirac pattern for two of them. Okay, and the third one is heavier. And now you can ask again this question, can we get the inverted hierarchy pattern with this setup? And the answer is yes. So here I show you the explicit value that gives you, for example, this pattern, or this inverted hierarchy pattern, or this one. Okay? So in all those examples, well, these powers are positive. So the angles, the mixing angles are small. So the Dirac mass matrix is diagonalized with small mixing angles, and then the right-handed mass matrix, Majorana mass matrix, has this pseudo-Dirac structure, and so the large mixing angle, they come out from the seesaw. Okay? So can we get hierarchical pattern, inverted hierarchy patterns with the seesaw, and is the inverted hierarchy compatible with hierarchy? So yes. But it requires a Majorana mass matrix with a Dirac-like pattern. So what is the origin of such a pattern? Now, what I claim is that such a strange pattern could point towards a theory with extra dimensions. And for instance, if you are in six dimensions, well, a Dirac spinner has eight components, okay? So you can label the 2x1 components by their 6D and 4D chirality, which are plus and minus and left and right, okay? And now if you write a Majorana mass term for this 6D spinner, well, in terms of these components, what you see is that the Majorana mass term always connects components with different 6D chiralities. Okay? So, suppose we have a 6D theory and we have this spinner C, psi, and somehow we have this Majorana mass and also a Dirac mass for the spinner, which could come from the compactification. So when you decompose that and look at the Majorana mass matrix you get for this these mass terms, this is what you get. So you have a matrix which is completely off-diagonal, okay? And now we can you can go one step further, which is to do a seesaw with this Majorana matrix. So in a very simple setup, let's say you have just one light neutrino, and this light neutrino is left-handed. So you will only connect to the right-handed guys, which in these notations here are the chi's, chi minus and chi plus, all right? So the Dirac mass matrix will, in general, be like this. So the seesaw mass matrix will have this value. And one thing that differs the 6D seesaw compared to the 4D seesaw is that this mass is proportional to m. So you can have a small neutrino mass from a small Majorana mass in 6D. Okay? So in 4D, you can have something similar with the so-called double seesaw. Okay? So now I will present a more complete model where you have one family, one generation in six dimensions. And so the basic idea is in these two extra dimensions, you have a topological defect, which is a vortex made by a gauge field and a scalar field. Okay, so being a topological defect, this configuration is stable. And then when you couple a single fermion to this vortex, well, as a consequence of the index theorem, you develop several chiral modes, and the number of chiral modes depends on the topological index of this configuration, okay? So, so we will use this setup to show that the family number in 4D corresponds to a winding number in these two extra dimensions around the vortex.
How is such a, just a little confused about something. Saying this stable, you're saying it's absolutely stable?
Yeah.
The solution set, there's no field configurations I can get rid of it?
No.
So the inverse of that is, how could it come into being?
How
could it come into being? Like how would it, what's its initial conditions? Where did it come from? If nothing can make it decay away.
It's just a compactification, right?
Don't ask me.
Oh, where it can come from, that I don't know. How?
I mean, it's just a solution to the background field equations. So I don't think you have to. You're obliged to answer where it came from. It's just it's a possible solution to your equations of motion. It's a consistent background to...
It's a consistent theory, but I'm just... I mean, if it just existed for all time, forever,
is what we're thinking. Well, you could have a phase transition that makes it...
No, but he's saying it's absolutely stable. So if a phase transition can't get rid of it, then how can a phase transition make it come to be?
No, but I think a phase transition can give rise to it.
Yeah. Okay, but a phase transition can't get rid of it.
It's like the creation of four cosmic strings. Yeah.
In the same way, because this is also like a, it's very similar, it's also with a Higgs potential. So anyway, there is something is cut there. So the Lagrangian.
Sorry, but then there's, I mean, the question goes also into the direction, what is the cosmological evolution? Because, I mean, if I have like cosmic strings or domain laws and so on, I mean, they start dominating the energy density at some point. But here it's...
This is transverse small dimensions, it's not cosmic string in 4D.
So how will it scale with the expansion?
Well, as long as your extra dimensions are stabilized against the Hubble expansion, then it won't do anything. But you must have some mass scale which is characterizing.
Yes. So you
some very high mass which characterizes the stability of the background.
if it's not scaling, so it's just acting like a cosmological constant, so to speak.
Yeah, which you would have had to turn away.
Yeah. But in that sense, a cosmological constant is less worrisome than you know, a meta field which eventually would start to. So if it has a different scaling with the scale factor, it would be more worrisome. Than
yeah, but as long as the extra dimensions are stable or not expanding or contracting, then you'll never see this in remarkable expansion. You know, I can just integrate this out, look at the large distance energy effective theory. I don't see anything.
Okay. So the basic vortex is called the Abrikosov. There is a R missing there. Nielsen-Olesen vortex, and so made of a gauge field, a Abelian gauge field, and then a scalar field. And so here, just to for notations, so the this is the 4D directions, and then we take a sphere for the extra dimension. So the two variables here are theta and phi. Phi is the angle around the vortex, and theta is the distance from the vortex core. And so we look for a static solution to these equations that has some winding, basically, around the core of the vortex that we put at 0, 0. And so the winding number is 1 in this case. Okay, so actually this configuration corresponds to a monopole because it's like a magnetic field flowing from a center. So if you take a 3D model of a monopole and you put it in a superconductor, well, it will concentrate like the repulse the magnetic field like towards one thing, one pole, and this is exactly the configuration of the vortex. So here, for a more detailed model, so this is the field content of the model. So we put one generation, one family for each fermion that we know in the standard model. So one generation of for the leptons, the left-handed lepton doublet, and one generation of the right-handed lepton electron. So here I didn't put the quarks, but obviously you can do that for quarks as well. And here we add one singlet, which will play the role of the right-handed neutrino. Okay, so those are the charges under the standard model group, as usual, and under this vortex group. So we have two scalars here, H, which plays the role of the usual Higgs doublet, which will break the electroweak symmetry. And then we have this scalar X, which is used to have intergeneration mixings. The scalar phi is component of the vortex. So basically, its value near the quarter of the vortex is close to zero, and then it's like that. And through the interaction of this scalar with the other ones, you can also localize the other scalars in the core of the vortex. For the fermions, when you couple them to the vortex, they develop chiral zero modes. So in this case, you choose the charges of these chiral of these fermions in such a way that you will develop three zero modes, as we see three families, okay? And so it is very important to stress that the profiles here of these zero modes, they are not put by hand. They are given by the Dirac equations for the fermion in the vortex background. Okay, so this is the coupling of the fermion with the vortex field. And
so those other scalars, they're getting BEVs as well, or?
Sorry?
Are those other scalars getting BEVs as well? Your first two scalars, are they going to get BEVs?
Yeah, so this scalar here gets a, well, it's the vortex configuration, okay? So this is like...
So that's that scalar, it's, you're having a Higgs mechanism?
Yes.
Okay, and then the other one, the so X scalar?
The X scalar, no. Just, well, I didn't put the complete potential between all these scalars here.
It's complicated.
Yeah, it's more complicated, but the basic thing, the bottom line is that through the interaction with the vortex field, you can localize them in the vortex. So
I'm a little worried of that. I mean, you can. It looks like you can just form a mass term for the Higgs out of your first scalar, and it's getting a BEV. So now you're gonna have to tune parameters between the bare Higgs mass parameter and that, right?
Yeah, there is some tuning. Yeah, there is some tuning. That's correct.
These formulas you have, this plus minus, these are the Y fermion X60.
Sorry.
What are these fermions? These are Y fermion X60 sense or what Dirac fermions in 60? These fermions, yeah.
So no, these are Y fermions.
In 60,
yeah. In 60. So it's a 4 by 1. So it's a Dirac fermion is 8 components. These are 4 components.
Right, so we pick up the Dirac fermion in 40. Each of them becomes.
Yes.
But this N, what about N? You did not.
So N is a. So N has no charge, okay, under U1.
Right.
And so N. Because of that, you cannot couple it to the vortex.
Okay.
So N is an unbound field, a bulk field.
Okay. But what's the what is the fermion? Is it Dirac fermion?
Dirac fermion. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So for the standard model fermions, you couple them to the vortex, and you have these solutions, zero mode solutions, and which have different winding numbers. So, and one thing which is interesting. So these are left-handed, for example, and what you see is that the plus component is related to the minus component with these functions F2 and F3, but these functions, they have different behaviors, all right? So for N is the winding number or the family number, so it's 1, 2, 3, basically. So for N equal 1, for example, F3 is like a constant, but F2 goes like theta square, okay, near the origin. So with these zero modes, when you couple, if you want to write down a term in the Lagrangian that will give you a mass term for a Dirac mass term for your fermions, you will do something like this. Okay? And, well, here is the simplest assignment you can give. So, with just two terms, one with the X field and one with the phi field. And well, this term here will give you the diagonal masses, okay? And so with the three families having a hierarchical structure determined automatically by the hierarchical structure of the zero modes here. Okay? And then you need some extra term to generate mixing, basically. So the bottom line is that from the structure of the zero modes, you get automatically hierarchical mass patterns, direct mass patterns. Now, for the neutrinos, what you do is a seesaw, as we outlined previously. So, but now the right-handed, the singlet field end is not bound to the vortex. So we have to develop it into the spherical modes. So this is an explicit development into spherical modes. And it appears that the modes, they can be grouped by groups of four, as previously. So you have, when you compute the effective Lagrangian for the this singlet field, you have something like a Dirac mass term which comes from the compactification, and this Majorana mass term. Okay, so the structure is exactly like the one I showed before. So now to have a seesaw mechanism, you also need Dirac masses. And here, to have Dirac masses, you need to connect the left-handed lepton doublet to the singlet field, but you need those terms with the two possible projectors. And the reason why is, whoops, the reason why is that effectively you try to build an effective Majorana mass for your lepton doublet, okay? And for the same reason as for the singlet field, this Majorana mass term will always connect fields with different 6D chiralities. So you need in the Lagrangian a terms with the projector minus and a projector plus to have a seesaw mass, a non-zero seesaw mass. So you have different possible fields, effective fields that give you a Lagrangian that is a singlet under all the groups. So and then you just compute the effective masses in four dimensions. So which is Dirac mass between the left-handed modes and a tower of Kaluza-Klein right-handed modes. And from the integration around the vortex, you get these two conditions, which are selection rules for the modes that can connect to a given family of left-handed doublet. Okay. So here is a picture of the neutrino masses, Dirac masses, as a function of lambda. So lambda is the parameter, one of the parameter characterizing the tower of the spherical modes. All right.
So it encodes the size of the exponential.
No, you have just like the in the spherical modes, you have L and the magnetic number and then the other quantum number, right? So this is like the L for the spherical modes.
So is the size of this compact dimension not entering really? Or?
No, it's not entering. So the when you compute the effective theory, well, the where is it written? The size of the extra dimensions comes here. Okay. So the field is decomposed as a tower of modes. Okay, with so the magnetic quantum number and then this one. So one thing to notice is that there is no mode with zero mass. There is no zero mode. All the modes are massive.
I think what he was asking is how much does the mass, as you were showing, the mass scale you were showing to neutrinos depend upon the extra dimensional size?
Oh, they depend through this parameter. Yeah. You're absolutely right. So I didn't put the actual values. I chose to plot this. So roughly R minus 1 is 100 TeV. Okay? So, but anyway, this is just to show that the Dirac masses, they oscillate and they converge to smaller values, but rather slowly. So when you compute the neutrino masses for the light neutrinos, you have to take into account a large number of modes, typically.
In principle, you send all the time.
Sorry?
In principle, you send all the entire time.
Yes. Yes. So the seesaw masses, you have you have this formula, which shows that indeed it is proportional to m, and then you have the Dirac masses with the plus projector and the minus projector, and you have this extra selection rule, so that the modes here in between connect. So you have this selection rule that n plus m plus s plus, that's the winding number of this operator, and s minus the winding number of this operator. So they all add to 4. So, and now, because of that, so remember, md plus is proportional to f3, and md minus is proportional to f2. So actually, you see that these seesaw masses, they will give you a dominant entry at the position 1, 3 for the neutrino mass matrix. Okay, so this inverted hierarchy structure for the neutrino seesaw mass is a consequence of the zero mode structure. So now, this is a numerical example that shows that if you choose in a suitable way the different operators you put in the 6D theory, you can even have this structure with not only the 1, 3 entry being large, but also the 1, 2. And this neutrino mass matrix gives you two large angles, as I showed before, right? So this is an explicit setup to get this structure.
I mean, where does this mass scale or the size of the extra dimension come from? I'm trying to remember back to your Lagrangian four, where you had that other scalar field getting a BEV.
Yes.
Is there any other mass scale in there other than that BEV? Where is that coming from? Where is R coming from, basically?
So where is R coming from? R, you choose R.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in your Lagrangian...
Here. Whoa, stop.
Yeah.
So I remember this.
Yes.
So the mass scale in there seems to be V. Correct?
No.
Oh, the curvature.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the Einstein equations in 6D must relate R to the other mass scales in that Lagrangian.
Yeah, so V's got to be related to R, right?
V, yes. V is related to R and to lambda, so...
just gets my other question about, because that V is going to give an effective mass term to the Higgs. And if you give an effective mass term on the order of like 100 TeV, that's a problem. So how does that relationship work?
Yes, there is a relation. I don't remember exactly. Yes, you're right. This V has some value that is related to the size of the extra dimensions. Yeah.
Is it like exponentially related or something? Or?
No.
Did you guys solve the 6D Einstein equations?
Yes. So.
It's going to be on the order of R as well.
That's what I was saying.
But you can.
But it's V is in the mass scale, right? This phi is a six-dimensional scalar, it's dimensionless. So then V should be dimensionless?
No. V is not dimensionless. And lambda is not dimensionless, neither. So you have a condition to get the right VEF for the 4D Higgs field. Okay.
So that V is on the order of like 100 TeV as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you see why that bothers me?
I will answer your question later. I have to go back and check that point. So where was I? So with these operators that we've chosen to dominate, so this is the structure you get for the neutrino mass, which is indeed off-diagonal, and for the charge Lepton matrix, which is diagonal with some mixing. And you can indeed recover all the observed data. Okay, so one consequence is for the neutrino-less double beta decay. So because we have this off-diagonal structure, there is some partial cancellation with this off-diagonal structure. There is some partial cancellation for neutrino-less double beta decay. So typically, we predict like a rather small effective mass. Okay? So now, one more thing that is interesting with this flavor model is that you have a natural suppression of many flavor-violating processes because the three families in 4D, they come from a single family in six dimensions. So in this setup with spherical extra dimensions, and when they are small enough, well, you can actually you don't need to confine the vector bosons, the gauge bosons, on the brain. So you can let them propagate in the bulk. And so the vector boson in 6D can be decomposed in the same way as a zero mode in 4D plus a Kaluza-Klein tower of massive bosons and also a Kaluza-Klein tower of scalar bosons. Okay, so now when you connect this vector boson to the fermions, the scalar modes, they don't interact with the fermion modes. So, but however, these Kaluza-Klein modes for the vector bosons, they can carry a a family number, so they can lead to flavor changing neutral currents like this one. So now one thing that is interesting is that in the absence of fermion mixings, the family number is an exactly conserved quantity. So here, for example, you can have a massive Z which carries one unit of the family number. And so you can have this type of process. Okay? And because of this conservation law, you have a suppression of all the processes that violate this family number. Okay? So here's an example of a process that does not violate this family number. And those processes are those who put the most stringent limits on the size of the extra dimension. Okay?
KI mixing is forbidden by this family number symmetry? Constraint from KI mixing?
Sorry?
A constraint from KI mixing is forbidden by this family number argument? Because usually that's the strongest one, which is like 10 to the 4 keV for tree level.
The KI mixing.
Yeah.
Well, for the KN mixing, it violates the family number.
Okay,
so there is an automatic suppression by the fermion mixing in this model. Okay. So yes, usually those are the processes who give the strongest constraints. But in this case, because of this conserved family number, they turn out to be less constraining than this one, for example,
well, for
than
some,
this process.
For some mixing.
Yeah, for mixings which give you back the observed CK matrix here. Okay, so all the processes that violate the family number, they turn out, so I didn't put the constraints, but they turn out to give you milder constraints. Okay? So that's the end. So here are the conclusions. Well, for one part, without any theoretical model, if we believe that we should have hierarchical fermions and that this pattern can explain at the same time quarks and neutrino observation, then the most plausible scenario is to have an inverted hierarchy and off diagonal dominance. And now, as I showed, this could point to a 6D model, and going to 6D can give you an explanation to the hierarchy problem, the replication of families in the standard model, and the flavor problem. Thank you.
What's the smoking gun test of your model again?
Oh, well, you can test it in the neutrino, because it predicts an inverted hierarchy. So if
but other models predict that too. So how would you be able to say it's my model?
Oh, that's yeah.
Ask it the other way. How would you be able to say it's not your model?
Well, that's easy. If you don't see an inverted hierarchy, yes. And then the other thing, if you have enough precision.
But is that even true? Because, I mean, you were choosing priors and you were choosing textures.
No. So
you cannot
get normal hierarchy with this model.
Cannot happen.
Yeah, this cannot happen.
It's because you mix these
because
chirality.
Yeah, because you are forced to connect a minus chirality component with a plus chirality component. Okay? So that cannot happen to have a normal hierarchy. And then the other thing is for flavor violation, you can relate them. If you have enough precision, you can relate these to the mixings. So there are only the bottom line is that there are only very few parameters in the 6D theory to explain all these processes.
How much is this going to change if you go to different topological set? You choose value number one and what about higher numbers?
Higher numbers of
the
dimensions, for example?
The molecule you could have more charges, topological charges.
Higher index, you mean topological index? Well, here this vortex setup gives you doesn't fix the number 3 for the number of the generations. So here you choose basically you choose the topological index to be 3. Yes. Yeah, the winding number for the vortex is 1, but then the topological index for the Dirac operator is 3 because you choose a charge. So you can either have a winding number which is 3 for the vortex and then connect it with Oops, I'm going the wrong way. So let me go back to this slide here, okay, which is the coupling between the fermions and the vortex. So here, in this case, the power k is 3, okay? But equally, you could have a vortex which has a winding number equal to 3 and choose this power to be 1. Okay, that's the topological index of the Dirac operator. So, yeah, there is no explanation for the number of families. There is just a setup that gives you several families in 4D and chiral families from one family in 6D.
So for all other combinations, it will not work. You have too many numbers. Or too few.
Yeah.
Is it possible to have just a single vortex on a sphere, or do you have an anti-vortex of few, like another ball or something like that?
No, I think you can have a single vortex. It's like a mono.
Where does the flux end up? Don't have the anti-vortex somewhere else.
It's
not radiating flux. Is it, doesn't it just give you a quantization condition of flux? Because this is magnetic flux, that's what the vortex is producing, not electric flux.
Let's say you have the vector field go around the vortex, right? So again, are any other poles going around that pole as well? So you expect that you have to have a vortex there, an anti-vortex there to have the system.
So I've not derived the actual looked at the actual configuration of the vortex. So, but the they use. I agree that this is a question, a good question. That they use different patches for the North Pole and the South Pole, and apparently they can. This magnetic field can go to asymptotically to zero in the South Pole. So,
who is they?
Sorry?
Who is they? Who constructed that solution?
These guys here, Troitsky and Libanov, basically.
You have a slide for the solution? No, not the entire solution.
I guess we can have further discussions and analysis.